Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, April 4th. I'm Alex Sosola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, as companies are starting to experiment with generative artificial intelligence, employees are finding new and creative uses for it. WSJ reporter Chip Cutter tells us how AI is being used in white-collar jobs and about some of the tech's limitations. And then, as Apple has come under increasing scrutiny over its App Store, one executive has come out as the most ardent defender of the company's walled garden ecosystem. We'll find out more about the company's former chief marketing officer and what he sees as Apple's path forward from WSJ reporter Aaron Tilley. But first, generative AI is taking on new work inside companies. And though it could have a big impact in the future, for now, it's starting small. Companies and executives in white-collar jobs are figuring out where AI can increase productivity and where it doesn't. WSJ reporter Chip Cutter spoke with my colleague Cordelia James about how AI is showing up at work. Here's their conversation.
What are some of the ways companies are experimenting with AI in the workplace?
Examples that struck me as sort of most novel was the tech giant Cisco Systems recently used Gen AI to really help to decipher the source of tension between a manager and a new employee. So with both people's permission, they uploaded chat logs between the two of them and kind of asked Gen AI, like, what's going on here? What are some reasons why these two may not be getting along? And what they found was that the manager wasn't feeling heard because the new employee was asking a lot of the same questions, while the new employee was just trying to get clarity about this person's role. And so just knowing that, Cisco said, helped to create a much better dynamic between the two of them. So it was almost Gen AI acting as corporate psychologist. Qualcomm's interesting too, because we hear a lot of companies saying they're going to use Gen AI to augment existing roles and to look for productivity gains. And so Qualcomm wants to set up a Gen AI creative studio to create more video and social content for platforms like TikTok. And the company's chief marketing officer told me that he'd never be able to hire an army of people to do this. And so what they're going to do is they're going to set up a Gen AI creative studio in Mexico City. It's close enough to the company's headquarters in San Diego, but it has a little bit of a lower cost of living. There's lots of creative talent there. And so they may hire up to a dozen people for this creative studio. But by using tools from Adobe and other vendors, the company thinks they can be super productive. So they'll use Gen AI tools, and they think they'll sort of be able to get a lot of output from them. And so I thought this was an interesting example because it's the company saying, we have our existing people, but we're going to not have to go on a huge hiring spree.
So what are some of the roles that this kind of technology could replace?
Jamie Dimon of JPMorgan Chase has said that he thinks people might be able to work 3.5 days a week in the future because AI is going to be able to do more work. Others have made the prediction that 80% of jobs could be done perhaps by AI in the next 10 years. There's lots of big, bold statements over what this might mean. Companies are still trying to figure out exactly what it looks like. And a lot of CEOs, like the rest of us, are a little bit confused over what exactly the impact will be, separating the hype from reality. But the thought is that it could affect marketing roles. It could change HR. It could change sales. Some companies are experimenting with this in finance and investor relations even.
And you spoke to over 24 executives for this. What were some of the main concerns that they had about implementing this technology in knowledge jobs?
Some are just concerned about privacy implications here. A lot of fear about putting proprietary information into large language models. So that's one fear. Of course, regulations remain in flux, but there's also a cost factor. For some Gen AI tools, the cost could be $30 per month per user. So the cost could add up really quickly. And we've heard from some people that right now, companies are actually spending more on Gen AI than they're actually realizing in productivity improvements. So that's a big hurdle. The other one is just a human factor. I talked to Clara Shai. She oversees AI at Salesforce. And she told me that it's one thing for boards and CEOs to understand what AI could do, but it's another for just everyday people, sort of workers, to think about how they could use these tools to change what they do. People get used to working in a certain way, and they may have to work a lot differently. And so just getting that change through companies is going to take some time.
That was Journal reporter Chip Cutter speaking with Cordelia James. Coming up, we'll find out more about the Apple executive who has stepped forward to publicly defend the company's App Store practices. That's after the break.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/wallstreet right now.
Apple is facing scrutiny from regulators in the U.S. and EU and rival tech companies over its integrated walled garden of hardware and services. The Apple executive who has become the face of the company in those fights is a man named Phil Schiller. WSJ reporter Aaron Tilley is here now to tell us more about Schiller and what his leadership shows about where Apple might be headed in its regulatory battles. Aaron, when did Phil Schiller start at Apple and what has his trajectory been?
Phil Schiller has the title of Apple Fellow at the company currently. He started a while ago in the period of time when Steve Wozniak had been kicked out of the company and was doing his own thing with Next. And Phil Schiller left the company too, but he rejoined it in 97 at the request of Steve Jobs himself, as Steve Jobs sort of really tried to turn around the company. And Phil Schiller was one of his really close confidants in this sort of revival of Apple following his return in 97. And he really played a pretty important role in all the development process of a lot of products at the company and thinking around it. And he served as a chief marketer until he was given the title of Apple Fellow in 2020. But he was really involved in a lot of aspects of the company.
So it sounds like he's been around for 30 years. But today, Apple is facing a particular kind of legal scrutiny around its App Store fees. Give us just a little bit of the background here about what that scrutiny is looking like.
It's facing a pretty large amount of scrutiny around the world for its practices related, but not solely related to the App Store. A lot of the scrutiny comes from the way Apple restricts and forces these commissions, these developers on top of Apple's platform with the iPhone. Recently, the Department of Justice sued the company over antitrust violations, they allege. It had to do with Apple monopolizing the smartphone using practices that sort of cut out competitors, and that has a lot to do with access. And in the EU, Apple's been fined around $2 billion and is under investigation for its compliance with a new European law called the Digital Markets Act that requires Apple to open up its platform more and more. And Apple has been quite resistant in some ways to comply with that, according to critics. So you have those two, you know, the entirety of the European Union really pushing down on Apple. You have the US government coming down on this large US tech player. And then you also have regulators in other places looking to scrutinize them. You see it in Japan, South Korea, Australia, they're all looking at this as well. It's, you know, a good chance it's going to continue to spread.
What has Apple's reaction generally been to this scrutiny and criticism?
It's a line that has worked for them pretty well. It's that, look, we're just looking after the interests of our user. We're trying to offer the user the best user experience, the highest level of integration, ease of use, and security and privacy for our users. And this is why we do what we do. And for any government to come in and tell us this is wrong, this is only going to compromise this idea that we have around how our products work.
So the stakes for Apple are high. How does Phil Schiller fit into all this?
So Phil was really important part in the original creation and development of the App Store under Steve Jobs. The iPhone launched in 2007 without an App Store, without sort of third-party app developer kits that people could develop on top of. It was all developed for the web. And so the following year, they launched the App Store in 2008. And since then, he's been involved in a lot of aspects around App Store review, the business side. He ran the whole thing really from 2015 to 2020. And now as the Apple Fellow, one of his main jobs left is really still the App Store business side. He's still running that day to day. And even though, you know, it seemed like maybe he was going to retire in 2020, he's still working nonstop on this issue.
So is he also the public-facing figure of this App Store issue?
Yeah, one thing Apple loves to do is not really have public faces to its company. Obviously, Tim Cook is a public face as the CEO, but the company likes to kind of operate as sort of a monolith. With Phil Schiller, though, you really see him popping up in a lot of ways that usually Apple doesn't like to see. They don't like to see their executives stand out. So, you know, in all the sort of discussions around how Apple defends itself, he always is popping up. In the trial that Epic Games brought against Apple, he was the main person testifying on behalf of Apple. He's really come out swinging in defense of their compliance with the Digital Markets Act in Europe. Epic Games released an email from Phil Schiller scolding them about their behavior. And I'm sure he didn't like that email out there from him, but it just exposes the level of how deeply involved he is in this.
That was our reporter, Aaron Tilley. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.